evening, everyone. The topic of our shiur, as I announced in the email, is Gabbai Tzedakah. And of course, we have the first major building campaign in this week's Parsha with Parsha's Truma. So it's not surprising that someone had to do the collecting. And in Perek Chaf Ches, Pasuk Hey, the Torah tells us, right here at the beginning, who are the Haim Yichu? What is the Haim Yichu? Yichu Haim, of course, refers to this big group of people who, the Chachmei Lev, who were collecting the gold. The Haim Yichu. So the Gemara Baba Basra and Avchesam Abeis, the Gemara Baba Basra has the following halacha. Tana Rabbanan. In the time of the Gemara, Mishnah, really, they had two types of regular funds of tzedakah. They had what was called a kupa and a tamchoy. The kupa was basically a financial tax that people paid, and the gabbai gave out money on a weekly basis. The tamchoy was what we would call a tzedakah. So the Gemara says, kupa shel tzedakah nigves b'shnayim. A kupa of tzedakah has to be administered. You collect the money with two people. And the money is dispersed with three. This tamchoy is three and three. And the Gemara asks, why, when it comes to the kupa of tzedakah, we would call a charity fund, why is the collection with two? Says the Gemara, ein osin sororos al hatzibur pachos mishnayim. Because to be the head of a tzedakah fund is a form of authority, empowerment over a tzibur. You're an authority figure. And srara, authority, should be done in pairs, not by yourself. Why is it miskalekes b'shlosha? Why are you dispersing the money with three? Kedini mamonos, says the Gemara, something very profound almost, that when an ani would come before and say, listen, this is how much I need, so you're looking into it. Is he telling the truth? What are his expenses? You're making decisions about how much you should give. It wasn't a set amount in the time of the Gemara. They would give it based on the need. Therefore, in essence, it was like a dini mamonos case. It needed a quasi bezdin. The Gemara then goes on to ask, what is the source? How do I know that you can't have a srara less than two? And the Gemara quotes our pasuk. The Gemara quotes the pasuk, the one that we just mentioned about how the plural, were collecting the gold, and the Mefarshim on the Chumash, including if you take a look at the Torah Tamima, but even the earlier Mefarshim point out that even though the Chachmei Lev that were collecting the gold are a lot more than two, but the minimum to have a Rabbim is two, and therefore for all future, that's the model for when you have an authority position, especially when it comes to financial things, you can't do it in less than two. It's interesting that the Argamara here, at least the first part, does not at first tell you what the sense of authority is. You know, I'm collecting money. I mean, Marvin, do you have authority? Over people?
Perhaps it's a tax.
Oh, so the Gemara says, and it's the Gemara both here, Baba Basra, and the Kiddushin, and Daf Ayin Vav, the Gemara says that in their time, the time of the mission of the Gemara, they had the right to impose the fee. And the Gemara says if someone was delinquent and didn't pay their fee, mashkin or so, you could forcibly seize assets as a mashkun, as a collateral, so that they should pay up what they owed to the stock of feeling. Like Mariam says, even on Shabbos, even when people would otherwise be distracted, and they may have good reasons that they were distracted, and they may need their own money more, it doesn't matter. You have that level of authority, and therefore, you see that there's an element. That's the Gemara here. And the Gemara just mentions that agav. But if you take a look at Shulchan Aruch, this is Paskin LaHalacha, it's when Reish Mem Tes Tzif Zayin. Gabbai needs to have, Simon Reish Nun Vav Gimel, 256.3, Reish Nun Vav Gimel, he needs to have two, and both the Shach and the Taz on that Simon both point to our Gemara, the Gemara Kedushin, the fact that you see they can forcibly seize assets as collateral and collect money, that's a form of srara, and therefore you need to have, it has the halachos of srara, which in this case apparently require you to have two. I would point out that it would be obvious, I think, at this point, that whether it's a gabbai tzedakah in a shul like we have, or you could even have an independent fund, as far as I know, it's pretty much unheard of anywhere in the world to have a tzedakah fund which can forcibly take money from people. The whole structure of tzedakah, as was alluded to before, in the time of the Mishnah and the Gemara, had a certain element of taxation. There were certain communal responsibilities, and that leads to all sorts of halachos, which are even included in Shulchan Aruch.
It's called Congress.
Right, with the stimulus. It's called stimulus. But obviously, that element pretty much doesn't exist, even in any kind. Even on that, I think Rabbi Lam also wants. Anyway, so that type of kehillah and that type of gabbai tzedakah we don't really have anymore. But I would argue that nevertheless, many of the halachos, let alone the values and hashkafos that the Gemara and that the Rishonim speak about, even about the old-fashioned or traditional model of gabbai tzedakah, are relevant. But one thing right away is important, which is it? Do you need to have two? Do we have? Is there something wrong to have a gabbai tzedakah? And I think maybe even someone once said something to Marvin. I think you once said something to me. And I think, with all due respect, they were mistaken, because the reason that a gabbai tzedakah is supposed to be in two is if he has srara. We just saw from the Gemara, Shach and the Taz. With all due respect, Marvin doesn't have srara. There are times I wish he did. There are times he wishes he did. But a gabbai tzedakah can't force you to give anything. We give him authority once we give him the money, but that's volunteer. We give the money to the tzedakah fund or whatever our fund, and therefore I don't think so. Whether there's an issue of honesty and that it's a good thing, v'hisim nekiyim, to have different people and double signing, there is an element of that in the hilchos of gabbai tzedakah, which we will get to, but it's not this. In other words, that's the point I want to say. I think it's a misconception. If you take a look at the Shach and the Taz, they make clear that the reason for two is not because of honesty. It's not because we're choshed the one, therefore you should have a buddy system. It's because of this formal idea of srara, and srara would require two. Just parenthetically, not to set off a different firestorm, but it is worth noting, I think, this is a raya for a related srara discussion. The Rambam has a very famous halacha that the Medrash, the Sifrei, says, Melech v'lo Malka. Halachically, there cannot be a female queen. It can be a wife of a king, but she cannot be the monarch. She cannot be the head of the Jewish people. And the Rambam, when he quotes this, he says it's not just Melech v'lo Malka, that's a Medrash. The Rambam is the only Rishon, as far as I know, who does it, but the Rambam says it's not just Melech v'lo Malka, it's all Sroros, all positions of authority. Now, this is something that a whole group of the population over the centuries has not been so happy with the Rambam for doing, but Lamaisa, even non-Sfardim, over the millennia, have accepted this chumrah of the Rambam, and there have been many communal positions which have been precluded from women holding because of this halakha.
The real Yerushalmer didn't hold that
Who?
The real Yerushalmer before the Second World War.
Do you know who the real one was? Rav Kook. Was the frumest of the frum on this issue. Not only did Rav Kook not want them to vote, that was tzniyus. He didn't want them to be out in the polling places. Mm-hmm. But Rav Kook, when this was which was a huge issue, because you got if you cut away half the frum population, the frum was going to get less votes,
right.
Which is why Rav Kook lost. Certain political realities won out, but over hidurim and tzniyus. But the other chiddush that Rav Kook had was that he held that even democratically elected positions, like to go to the Knesset, was a violation of this Rambam, and therefore he didn't want women being elected. That's correct. Rav Uziel, who was a Talmud of Rav Kook, wrote a tshuva b'shaito against Rav Kook, but I've covered for Rav Kook, he didn't publish it until after Rav Kook died, where he argued that a democratically elected official does not have srara. And it was, again, it was kind of a halachic slash philosophical question of what is the definition of srara. Similarly, more closer to home, there's been an issue, I'd say it's come up, certainly not before the last 20 years, and not so many times, last 20 years, 25, 30 years either, there's been an issue of shul or school presidents, or board positions. Can that be a female or not? And there have been numerous poskim over the years who, with not all the way necessarily, not every posek draws the line in the exact same place, but again, this basic issue, to the extent that there are some poskim who are making either a board member but not an executive board member but not president. And in some cases, in certain circumstances, I know of very significant poskim over the years, for shuls in particular, I know of at least two examples, where major poskim were matir that a woman could become president. And in all those cases, it was a pshat that they held that we don't have to care about the Rambam, or in 2009, the Rambam doesn't apply anymore, none of that. That might have been how it was interpreted, but that's a travesty. The real pshat was, with all due respect to our president, but with all the respect, what was the point? That even a president does not have srara. again, what's the idea? And I think this is a riot. This Shacham says that the Sarara is defined as being able to force people. And even if you say, I could raise dues or I could change the seat money, you still can't force people because people can opt out. They don't have to come to the dinner. They're not members of the shul. When you become a member of a shul, you choose to daven their yom and their roim, you choose to go to their banquet, etc. That's all voluntaristic. It's all you're making a choice. You're opting in. Once you're opting in, then there's a system for who decides how much you have to pay to stay in. But you still have the ability to opt in. Sarara implies a sense of forcing. So again, I'm not here to get into the whole issue of women in leadership, but I think that here, in a less controversial kind of a realm, you see a support for those poskim who were, so to speak, more flexible in certain cases, again, not because of quote-unquote liberal tendencies, but because of an understanding of the definition of Sarara, which really, in many, many cases, does not apply anymore in our modern, and that's a sociological, not a philosophical term, in the modern world in which we live in. But be that as it may, that is kind of the Pesach. Again, we have four out of the next five parshios that are dealing with the collection and the money and all this stuff. And again, you see that there was an element of gavos, of, you know, what's it's a lot of money, the Mishkan and the Klei HaMikdash, and they had to have some people in charge of it. And I want to use, so to speak, the rest of this year to kind of, as I say, discuss this broader issue of Gabbai Tzedakah, leaving aside this issue of Srara. And two, we have one Gabbai, most funds, whether they be of local shul or multi-million-dollar tzedakah funds in Israel and America, they're all usually run, they may have a board, depending on how comprehensive and how sophisticated they are, but there's usually, in the end, one person there, and as I said, I think that that's very, very legitimate. The Gemara on Baba Basra, two dafim later on Daf Yud, does mention the issue of honesty, and mentions that one should not, when you appoint your gabbai, you shouldn't appoint someone unless they're as honest, like Rav Hananya ben Trajon. What did Rav Hananya ben Trajon do? We know him for his Mesiras Nefesh. But what did he do? So Tosfos says that there was a case once, where even though there was nothing wrong with him, he didn't do anything wrong, but some money got lost from the fund that he administered, and he gave up from his own money in order to cover the shortfall. So he was so unimpeachable in his integrity that he was the ultimate model for the honesty. In fact, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins in Reish Mem Peh Zayin, and then both the Shulchan Aruch again and the Raman Siman Reish Nun Vav, they quote that there are numerous qualities one should look for in a Gabbai Tzedakah. He should be able to be kind and sensitive to the aniyim that he works with. He should be a pikeach. He should understand the finances and the economics of both the collection as well as evaluating people in terms of how they should need it. It's all quoted in Shulchan Aruch. But first among equals, the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama both say, of course, is that he should be neman. He should be an honest person that people can trust. It's interesting. You know, sometimes I assume less than rabbis or other public figures, but I imagine it's certainly conceivable that a gabbai could get bezyonos and people should complain to him. So it's worth noting two things. Number one is no one's been above it. Just like we know that Moshe Rabbeinu got tzaras about all sorts of other things, there's a famous medrash in the beginning of Parshas Pekudei, which is like the twin of Parshas Truma, or Parshas Tetzaveh, I guess, but still part of this whole unit, where the medrash there says that Moshe himself changed the way he administered things and brought more people on board because he overheard that people were accusing him of putting some money in the pocket. Even Moshe Rabbeinu was chashed at least by somebody, which is why they quote this as a reason for that there are two types of Gabbai Tzedakah. In some circles, this was a hired position. And in other cases, many cases, it's a volunteer position. So aside from the nafkamina for the Gabbai, in terms of his own personal tax return, but there are other nafkaminas as well. The Shulchan Aruch says that if you have a Gabbai Tzedakah who's getting paid, then halachically, he owes at least once a year to give a cheshbon to whoever he answers to, whoever's paying that salary. This is how much we took in, this is how much we gave, here are the receipts. He owes that to them. A gabbai who's a volunteer, mi'ikra din, is not required to do that. When I say mi'ikra din, I mean to say that any organization, shul or otherwise, can make an agreement with the gabbai. We are nominating you, we are asking you to take a position, and these are the stipulations. You can make any agreement you want, but it's not implicit, it's not inherent, as if you were getting paid. But if someone who volunteers, so the Rama says, even though mi'ikra din, you're not obligated to make a cheshbon, he says, but it's highly recommended. Because you're the last thing that a gabbai wants, a faithful, honest gabbai, is that even like Moshe Rabbeinu, he should be accused. So he recommends. This is the better business practices. The Rama says better that one should do it. So first of all, even though there may be some bizyonos, the first thing to keep in mind is, in the spirit of misery loves company, You're not the first, you're not the last. Even Moshe Rabbeinu was chashud. And you do everything you can to be above board, and in the end, it still won't make everyone happy. And when you take public responsibilities, you know that that's unfortunately something that goes with the territory. But another interesting thing is that the Shulchan Aruch himself quotes in Siman Reish Nun Zayin Seif Zayin, because again, at least in the Shulchan Aruch today, apparently this is a very common issue of people screaming and insulting the Gabbai. And the Shulchan Aruch says you shouldn't, you know, do not let your heart be upset by this. It's okay, says the Shulchan Aruch, because for every bezayon, you get more and more schar. You get more and more reward. And in fact, the Birkei Yosef and the Shuri Bracha discuss some very tense situations where people try to intimidate Gabbai Tzedakah and they try to blackmail them, not even so much with money, but mechly with guilt. If you don't give me enough money, the Birkei Yosef discusses a case, well, if you don't give me an extra $50 a week, I'm going to have to work on Shabbos. That'll be on your conscience. So can you blackmail the Gabbai in such a way? Or the Shiur Bracha says somebody, you have enough money for one person, and you have one who's a little bit more of a tzaddik, one who's a little bit more of a rasha. And the rasha, so to speak, doubles down on his rishus. Says, if you don't pick me, I'm gonna shmat out, I'm going to convert out. So do we have to be held hostage by these things? So again, the postgame in all these other variations, cases say, in all these cases, we don't have to worry about it. That's their problem. And I, it's agmas nefesh, it's grief for the Gabbai. Of course it's grief. Nebuch, that's grief. It's unfair, but it's grief. But don't worry, they promise that there's more and more schar for every single thing that a person does in this regard.
Is the one thing you account
to find? You mean if someone, what, is like the treasurer of a shul, does he owe?
It could be.
Any moment shul tzibur, it could be. I mean, that's not discussed here in Hilchos Tzedakah. But one could certainly argue that it's certainly relevant, advisable for sure, and maybe even more strictly speaking. I want to just mention one more thing. I'll take a question from you in a second. When it comes to the model of Rechanan ibn Trajon, so he was a very honest person, as we said, and honesty is the first character you look for in the Gabbai Tzedakah. The postgame, the Beis Yosef, very discusses that Rechanan ibn Trajon was also a Tana. He was a huge Talmud Chacham. Does every Gabbai have to be the biggest Talmud Chacham also? It would be nice, but does he have to be? So the Beis Yosef has a whole discussion of this. And in the end, he decides that you don't have to be. And in fact, when you look in the Shulchan Aruch, when he's paraphrasing his own discussion, he leaves it out. He speaks about being a pikeach and being a chacham and mamonis and understanding the finances, but he leaves out anything about Torah. And Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva in Igros Moshe and Chelek Alasim and Kuf Memtes, where he discusses this, and he makes the point that the Beis Yosef is deliberately left out in Shulchan Aruch because, quite honestly, it's not relevant. Not anymore, you know, everyone should try to be a Talmud Chacham in their own private life, but it's not relevant to the position of being a Gabbai Tzedakah. Says Rav Moshe, more than being book smart, you have to be street smart. You have to know which aniyim are really the genuine ones, who's not so genuine, what's the best way to allocate the money. If I give too much money away in January, am I going to have enough money left in June? You have those type of smarts that a person has to have. You have to be smart to be a Gabbai Tzedakah. But that type of smarts are what's required. Being a Talmud Chacham is nice, but even if you're not a Talmud Chacham, so you'll consult with Talmud Chachamim, that's not absolutely required. Yes? Well played by us. That's a good question. My impression is that in the time of the Gemara, there was a lot of latitude given to the Gabbai, even for the legislative. It's my impression. On the other hand, the specific example that they spoke, that the Shach quotes, was, I guess if you can call it, on the enforcement end. So again, to take a model, which we're not applying, but theoretically, just to take a model, it could be that the board makes up, you know, how much a person owes. But the Gabbai is the one who, you know, is the heavy in the Gemara scheme. As I said, we don't have that anymore. But in the Gemara scheme, it was a question of the enforcement. Beyond the extra schar that you would get in an unfortunate situation if you had... Not us. After many years, maybe. I don't think that's still not. A person could walk away themselves.
Can't do
yeah, person, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, and we're not garnishing the wages. We're not We don't have that ability. Again, it would be nice. I think sometimes, but nevertheless, it's just not a reality. But aside from the extra schar that a person could get in unfortunate circumstances, from Saragra, if you get the extra grief, but beyond that, more importantly, and I would say more pleasantly and optimistically and idealistically, the Shulchan Aruch quotes in Siman Reish Mem Tes, Siv Hei, paraphrases a famous phrase from the Gemara, also in our sugya here in Baba Basra, Godol Hama'aseh Min Ha'oseh, that someone who enables, or is a catalyst for other people to do, for other people to give, if you take it literally, is even greater than the ones who give. And the Shulchan Aruch, when he quotes it, says someone who administers a tzedakah fund, the schar is as good or greater than the people who actually donate to the fund. And as I said, this is quoted by the Shulchan Aruch, and the Taz discusses it, and he says, even people, he says, we're not talking about the fact that you can force people to give. It's not, you know, ma'anis. Even people who gave baratzon, which you think is a great schus, nevertheless, the gabbai, who all he did was take the money that a person walked in voluntarily to give. The guy gave baratzon. It's not talking about, we're not talking here about forcing. But just being a gabbai and being the one who has, and really this is the way to look at it, having the zchus to be the one who takes the money in and disperses it, that is considered as great or greater of a zchus than the people who give. In fact, the Derech Amuna, that's Reb Chaim Kanievsky's commentary on the Rambam in Sefer Zroim. So, Hilchos Tzedakah, for the Rambam is there because it's in Hilchos Matnas Aniyim, which we know, of course, in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, you know, in the agricultural-based economy, you had the Meiser Ani, etc. So Meiser Ani, Hilchos Matnas Aniyim, the Rambam discusses there, and Reb Chaim Kanievsky, and that in his encyclopedic commentary to the Rambam, he quotes from the Marsham. The Marsham was the great Galitzin Chassidus Shaposek and Rav, who of course was the grandfather and the namesake of the Maggid of Shvadran, who in America at least Rav Pesach Kron made famous. So the Marsham was the Maggid's namesake, and the Marsham was a Rebbe, but he was the Rebbe that the Litvak liked. He was a real an emes of Talmud Chacham and a real genius, and the Chaim Kanievsky quotes him. Maybe he's putting on his Hasidic hat here. I didn't have a chance to look at this inside. I just saw Reb Chaim Kanievsky's quote. But he quotes that the Marsham says that somebody who accepts being a gabbai tzedakah, all of his sins are forgiven. Now, I don't know if that's only a one-shot deal, and if it is, do you get to decide when you want to cash that in? I don't know. If you meet Reb Chaim Kanievsky, you could ask him. But nevertheless, he does say it, and it's certainly worth sharing. Yes. Furthermore, here's something that's very interesting. Not only to Marvin, but we have different gabbayim and other minyanim. Even Marvin can only be at one place at one time. Mekhain are in the morning, for example, when we have multiple minyanim, and you have other people collecting. So the Aruch HaShulchan, again, that's not a Musar Sefer. The Aruch HaShulchan says in Siman Reish and Zayin Sif Aleph that one, in general, one should treat the gabbai tzedakah with a level of respect you would treat any leader. And the Pisrei Tshuva there quotes from a Tshuva's Yad Eliyahu that when the gabbai is going around collecting, yeah, you have to stand up for it. Exactly as they quote. Because that is that we don't take in, you know, we're distracted, we're listening maybe to Chazas HaShatz, we're learning maybe, we're talking, hopefully not. And the gabbai is just going around, and either we give, we don't give, but we don't have a sense. What's going on is something very, very special, and very kadosh, and the Pesachei Tshuva holds that even if you were sitting for a Chazar Sashat, one is supposed to stand when the gabbai tzedakah comes around.
That's why you say for the Harasimah Habris.
Well, that's an old question. These are different theories, but yeah. Right, very good. With all of this, said and done, no one really holds the question is, what is someone, is there a chiyuv to be a gabbai tzedakah? So the answer is pretty much not, and we'll get back to that not in a second, but it is worth noting that the Mordechai, one of the great Rishonim, and the Mordechai is quoted by the Darkei Moshe on the tour as saying that even though you're not obligated, but if a community asks a person to be the gabbai tzedakah, one shouldn't turn it down. It's not like certain other kibbutzim where one should try to run away from. On the contrary, because it's considered such an important thing, if the powers that be feel that you're the right person for it, one really is not supposed to turn something like that down. Not obligated, absolutely, but one is supposed to say yes. I mentioned, on the other hand, though, even though you're supposed to say yes, you're not strictly obligated. And this actually leads to an interesting halachic chiddush. It's a debated chiddush in its context. You'll see what I mean in a second. But it's worth sharing with you, and it really brings out this point of on the what as good and as important as it is, and not being strictly obligatory. And this is a chiddush of all places, not in Yoredeya and Chosadaka, but from the Nesiva Samishpat and Choshe Mishpat. And the Nesiva Samishpat is discussing Osteik B'mitzvah Pater Min HaMitzvah. We know that within basic parameters, if you're involved in one mitzvah, you don't have to stop that to do the second mitzvah. In fact, you may be, according to some, you're not supposed to stop it before you do the second one. So that's a famous thing in yeshivas. Everyone who's been through yeshiva at some point had some rabbi giving shurim on Osteik B'mitzvah and all the lumdus and all the discussion of it. And there are parameters. Some Rishonim say here yes, there no, boom, boom, boom. And the Achronim are struggling. What are the guidelines? One yes, one no. So comes along in the middle of that whole discussion, which is fascinating, but nothing to do with us, comes along the Nesivas HaMishpat and Siman Ayin Beis, and the Nesivas HaMishpat has a Chiddush. He says, what about a Gabbai Tzedakah? He's going around collecting, and then the Ani asks him personally for money. So do you say, I'm being Osek B'mitzvah, I'm collecting money, I'm Potter from the mitzvah of giving money, or not? So, B'pashta, simply, one would have thought that the answer to that is yes. In fact, the Gemara has famous cases, right, of the Shomer Aveda, right, someone who's involved even more passively in doing a mitzvah of watching a lost object, that he's Potter from an Ani who asks him for money. So, L'chora, you would think that here also the Gabbai is doing his thing, he should be Potter from giving tzedakah. So here's where the flexibility of not being obligated is the other side of that, the other edge of that sword, says the Nesivas, because the truth is that there really is, since there really is no chiv to be a Gabbai tzedakah, the act of collecting may not be considered a mitzvah, or even if it's a mitzvah, it's not an obligatory mitzvah. It's what we call just a mitzvah kiyumis. If you do it, you get a mitzvah. But it's not a strict obligation. And here is the Nesivas' big chiddush, which is beyond the scope of our shir. He says about a mitzvah kiyumis like this, you would not say, Osek b'mitzvah, pater min mitzvah. And therefore, he says, on the one hand, that's why in communities, if they so choose, you're allowed to pay and the Gabbai is allowed to accept money. If you had a chiyuv, you couldn't accept money for it. You're allowed to accept money for it, but the Nesivas says, on the other hand, the other side of that sword is that he says you would not apply Osek B'mitzvah. So we're not, I don't want to digress, we're not giving a share to Osek B'mitzvah, and many, many, many subsequent Achronim argue strenuously on this Nesivas. If you'll invite me back to discuss Osek B'mitzvah, so maybe we'll discuss those sources there. But I'm just mentioning it to you here, just because of out of nowhere in this larger discussion, he's the one source that plugs in Gabbai Tzedakah as a character, as a personality that can be analyzed in this frame. And even if you disagree with his application, the Osek B'mitzvah Patur Min HaMitzvah, I think most people agree with his assessment of the Gabbai, that the community is obliged to have a Gabbai Tzedakah, especially in the old Gemara model of the community of the Kehillah. But no individual has the obligation, and even when they're asked, they're not strictly obligated. But no individual, the community has a chiyuv. Any individual who does it, it's really a chesed. And that has all sorts of zechusim and reward associated with it. But again, they're like everything, there are two edges to the sword. No, I don't want to get distracted from that. What I want to do, I have a few more things I want to share with you in just a few more minutes. I want to now just discuss, now that we've been discussing some of the personality characteristics that you're supposed to look for in a Gabbai, and the reward and the status, I want to discuss, what do I have in my notes here? Four more things about the way a person should collect, the way the Gabbai should comport himself when he's doing his solicitations or his collections, and other questions about what level of autonomy the Gabbai has in terms of where the money goes. So again, like all of these things, if I could paraphrase Rav David Cohen, each one of these things could be the whole shiur, but we'll spend just two and a half minutes or so on each one of these three or four topics. So the Shulchan Aruch says in Simen Reish Mem Ches Sif Zayin, that it is usur for a gabbai to pressure someone into giving. You're not allowed to pressure someone into giving. The Ber HaGola quotes this from a Rambam, who gets it from a Gemara in Baba Basra, but whatever the bibliography, so to speak, is, fundamentally one can ask a second time, one can plead, but, and again, admittedly, sometimes where to draw the line is going to be unclear, but wherever that line is, there is a line. That's the most important point I'm trying to get at. There is a line, and as virtuous as the cause is, not everything goes. You're not allowed to pressure someone into giving money. In fact, the Mata Ephraim, of Ephraim Zalman Margolios, who we know has this monumental work on the Yomim Naroim, the Mata Ephraim, say in his laws of Hilchos Erev Yom Kippur, apparently on Erev Yom Kippur, the Gaboyim thought that's a great opportunity. It's like what we sometimes do at the end of the year. You know, so again, to the extent that you take advantage in a normal, healthy sense of people's instinct to want to give and to get extra zechusim in Erev Yom Kippur, so why not? You know, we can only imagine if in the time of the Mata Ephraim they had Marvin as the gabbai, there'd be these very clever, you know, flyers up and zachor, and you'd come up with all sorts of good ideas. Nothing wrong with that. But the Mata Ephraim attests, and he's very, very upset, that he says in his days the gabbaim were doing much worse than that. Not only were they pressuring the people in public, but if they wouldn't give, they were ridiculing them. And people were so scared of the strong-handed tactics of the gabbai that in order to avoid being embarrassed, they were giving. So on some level, you would say it was working. But says the Mata Ephraim, this is a horrible, horrible thing. And he quotes from earlier poskim that a person who gives because of the expectations that you've created, and he's giving just to avoid embarrassment, it's a shmek of gezel. It's a little bit of gezel. So again, where to draw the line, that's why, going back to the beginning, who you choose as your gabbai is a very important thing, because there's a certain measure of integrity that really has to be, and there's, admittedly, I would say there would be areas of gray in terms of where this lines, but that's gufa, that highlights how important it is that you have the right person doing the solicitations, because as much as every worthy cause has a right to ask energetically and even repeatedly for people to give, again, remember, the only reason that they ask repeatedly is because people didn't respond the first time. But nevertheless, there is a line, as I say, both in terms of embarrassment and in terms of pressure, which, if crossed...
This is different than if honey comes, you have to give him something.
We're not talking about that at all. I'm talking about this, there's no honey with us. I'm the gabbai collecting.
It's in contradistinction to...
Correct. Although even then, my chiv to give is not the same as his right to badger me. It's not all bets are off for the honey. You know, we've had this. I mean, I'm sure you've experienced this. I've experienced this at least once in recent memory at my house, and even once in shul, where, speaking of Osik B'mitzvah, I believe, you can quote me on this, that when one is in the middle of davening, you're not chayav to give. You're being involved in the mitzvah. And if you want to be... So my compromise is at least between yishtabach and tachman. You don't have to give. So somebody once came over to me, and I was in the middle of Shema. So I just pointed to my sitter, which is why I wasn't giving, you know, with an invitation, obviously, to come back. So he got so upset, he took his letter from behind him, he's just pointing to this. I'm pointing to the sitter, and he's pointing to this. You know, sometimes it's just an issue of prudence. You know, he didn't get more from me, let me just put it that way. But leave that aside. The point is that even if I was wrong, not if I had been wrong and I should have given him, it still doesn't matter him trying to embarrass me, which is what he was trying to do. You know, or you give a person, there's no halakha about how much you give, right? So we've all had that at the door for sure, right? I gave a check, and, you know, so screaming it's not enough, and then he starts taking out the canceled checks of other people in the community, look how much he gave. Yeah.
The only point I was trying to make is that honey, you got to give him something. Gabbai tzedakah, you don't have
there,
to...
Again, there is a huge... Again, this would be another shir, but there is a separate puzzle. There's a puzzle. Again, I don't... You're right, but I don't want to leave it at that. We'll just have to leave it at that for now. It is more complicated than sometimes people think. But yes, there is a notion that there's a losase, that if someone asks, you're not allowed to keep a close fist, so to speak. You have to give. They say, was it Rav Moshe? I don't remember who. They say that there was a person, I can't remember who, one of the Gedolim, you know, who got solicitations from all over the world, and he gave to every one of them. But even in the mail, he sometimes gave a dollar. There's no minimum. You just have to give something. And who was it? Was it your father? Someone, I was at a Levaya of a person recently, and they told the most breathtaking story. It was your father, right? Mickey's father. It was such a breathtaking story about how he got these solicitations from all over the world, and he couldn't afford to give to all of them, but he kept a list of all of them. And when his children asked him, what are you keeping the list for? He says, because when I win the lottery, I'm going to send them all money. It wasn't a joke. It was serious. I kept out cancer. It was a breathtaking story. So, but the bottom line is, if you don't have, you can't give. And even if you give, you don't have to give as much as they want you to give. Yes? Okay. Okay.
Should read it. Put it aside. I guess after you have 75, you know, you can throw out the old one.
Okay, fine. Fair enough.
Second thing is, as far as this is concerned, you talk about if you're a shop yourself, do you have to keep it?
There's discussions for everything, but I didn't discuss that. I'm not discussing it. That would be that is an interest. Yeah, that is a shaila in general. Yeah, not just for tzedakah and other things when people make agreements because they're under duress. You know, usually we assume that those are not chal, especially that's where the idea of a modal comes in. But anyway, okay, that's three more things to mention. Another one is the following: that the Gemara in Sukkah has a very harsh discussion in Daf Tes Amud Aleph Amud Beis about four different people who lose their money to the Malkus. Four different people who are going to, have to lose all their money. They're going to get wiped out even without an economic crisis. They're going to have their own personal crisis. So one of the four examples is a person who's described as poskim tzedakah berabim ve'enam notanim. So the simpler saying the Gemara, which is important enough, is that for all of us who are try to be on the giving end, sometimes we get there's an appeal, and we make a pledge, and then we don't give it. So you're posting, but tzedakah ve'enam notanim. You said you're going to give, but you don't give. It is bad enough. But if you take a look at the Marsha on that Gemara, he has a different shot. The Marsha says it refers to someone who made a huge pledge, gave a fraction of it, and explained that I'm a tzaddik. I never intended to pay the whole pledge, but I made it a larger number because I thought that would inspire other people to give. Now, not he's being dishonest. He means it. There's such a svara to do such a thing. And yet, the Marsha says that that's a terrible thing. And Dayan Weiss, the Minchas Yitzchak, in the Chuvas, in Chelek Gimel, he quotes this Marsha Lahalacha and applies it not only to the people, but presumably also to the Gabay Tzedakah. In other words, one could imagine, again, times are tough, you be creative, you want to be aggressive. One could imagine that one of the ways, and it's certainly true psychologically, if you're smart and you know what numbers to use and what names to attach to them, if you have in any one group, there's a dynamic to every group. I remember very vividly the shul that I davened in Riverdale, which was a beautiful, wonderful shul, but it was a pretty low-budget shul. And basically they, unlike, let's say, us, who until this year never did an appeal, they did, I think, at least two, if not three appeals for the shul out loud every year at the various, Yom Tovim. And that was basically where the operating budget of the shul came from. And it took me a little while until I figured out there was an obvious, or it became obvious, pattern, which is that there were certain people in the shul who were known to be the deep pockets. So they would always go first. One guy in particular, and then like a 1B. Whatever they gave, so then that set the bar. Then there was a whole second group of people. So this one guy gave that. There was another guy who always fancied himself on the same level. So whatever guy A gave, guy B would give. Then there was a whole group of five or six other people, and they knew we're on tier two. So if the first group get 5,000, so they said, okay, we're going to give the 3,600. Then there was another group of 20. They always gave a little bit less than tier two. You saw this, so it was a domino effect. It all depended on how much the first guy gave. So even though that was, in a certain sense, very rigid, but in a more fluid sense, in every group, there's a certain dynamic of people wanting to live up to expectations of others and keeping up with their friends and wanting to appear in, listen, we're all human on some level for these kind of things. So one could imagine, even with the best of intentions, that a gabbai may play with the numbers, so to speak, in order to manipulate people into giving more. The cause may be virtuous, but the methods are dishonorable, and it certainly should not be done. Two more quick points. One is a very complicated discussion. This is at least one shiur in its own right, if not more. But we'll just mention it briefly, is the issue of shinui mitztaka litztaka. To what extent can you collect for one thing, and then, for even for good, noble reasons, there's a shortfall in another tzedakah, and then change the allocation from one cause to another. So the Gemara in Erechin basically says that once the money is given to the gabbai, assuming it's been given for a particular cause or purpose, then you're not allowed to change its destination. And the Shulchan Aruch passing this way in Siman Reish Nun Test Sif Aleph. The Shulchan Aruch, as an extension of that, says, what about loans? Can a fund loan money? Right? The fund is a tzedakah fund. It's giving away money. But could it give a loan? Now, on the one hand, the loan is better because you hope to get the money back. On the other hand, typically, like any private person, a fund is going to loan more money than they would give. And the risk, which of course is obvious, is that even if the ani is sincere in his expectation to pay it back, there's always at least a 50% chance that he's not going to pay it back. Furthermore, you have some people who are dishonest, and they can't get it, so they can't get tzedakah anymore, so they ask for loans. So when it comes to the ani who does that, that's gzela. That's mefer shalacha. That's gzela. To take a loan you know you can't pay back is considered a form of gzela. But let's say the ani is sincere. Really, really just came up short this month. He just needs a few extra bucks. You know, can you loan me the money? So I have money. I'm a tzedakah fund. I'm not a free loan. There is a free loan fund, but I'm a tzedakah fund. But he comes to the tzedakah fund. He wants to know, can I take a loan? And the Shulchan Aruch says it's not so simple that you can give a loan. If you take a look in the Pisrei Tshuva, he says, well, I know the Shulchan Aruch says you shouldn't do it, but we do it. We're lenient, says the Pisrei Tshuva. He quotes from the Chamudi Daniel that nowadays we are lenient. Tzedakah funds seem to do this regularly. He says he's not sure why it should be mutter. He's not sure why. Then he says maybe it's an implicit assumption that the donors are okay with it. If you assume that the donors...
borrowing money or they're lending money?
No, the fund is lending. The fund is lending. Because you're helping somebody. Why do I give you the money to begin with? To help people. It's a form of shinoi. That's why I'm connecting it. It is a form of shinoi. But it says the Chamuri Daniel, maybe the svar is, it's an implicit agreement. So in that sense, it's a shinoi, but a shinoi may be only prohibited because I assume he gave for A, I can't give it to B. But if I know he wouldn't mind me giving to B, maybe it should be allowed. That's his possible svar. The Ksav Sofer has a whole tshuva, which I was very excited when I saw, but then I realized I didn't understand it. It looks so promising, and it probably is great, but I was in a rush tonight, I didn't understand it. So there's a Ksav Sofer out there that may provide a little bit more light, but unfortunately I don't understand it. It's in Yoredei Siman Kuf Yud, and he points out that there seems to be what he claims is the machlokas were shown him why in general you're not allowed to go from one fund to another. In other words, people give money expecting you're going to give to X, and now you're giving it to Y, which you can't do. He says the machlokas are shown him why, and loans will be enough gemina. It sounds like the perfect kind of a Dvar Torah I would love. But I didn't really see the machlokas as he was describing it, so I'm not 100% sure. The basic issue, though, he claimed there's some machlokas. I saw two versions of the same shita, which was the very practical, prosaic fear. You won't have money for what your actual purpose is. What if then aniyim come and are asking for money in the way that you were really designed for, and you're going to be short money. So there may be some variations of that, but that's the basic fear. Nevertheless, as I said, the minhag, the Pesach Tshuva quotes it, the Derech Emunah Chaim Kanievsky also quotes in the Chazanish, that he says the minhag nowadays is to be meikel, but he cautions that tzedakah fund should be very, very careful, you know, how often and to what and what levels they should give. Yeah. I mean, psychologically, I could tell you, at least in the couple of the cases that we've been involved with here, we always... But I could tell you, at least in one case that I was involved with, remember, our gabbai was out of town, so I was deputized. I gave the person more than I would have if he just said, I need money, how much can you give me? I definitely gave him more. And in that particular case, hopefully it'll change, it's been a lot longer than it was supposed to be, and he's only paid back a fraction. So... anyway, I just want to close with one thing. It's late, so I could even bypass the question from Marvin. Honor. Giving honor to givers. You know, sometimes people are, you know, find that distasteful, and there are times where it really is distasteful, but it's important to note. It's important to note that the Rajba was one of, if not the first, but it was an ingenious fundraiser. The Rajba has a tshuva where he says it's absolutely the right thing to do to give honor to donors. And he makes the first obvious point that by giving honor to donors, people are people, you will inspire other people to give. And Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva, obviously a lot more recently, in Yardei Chelik Beis, where he also discusses this. The particular case of Rav Moshe was a Mosad that asked Rav Moshe two questions. Number one is, could they accept and honor a non-Jew who gave a lot of money? And number two is, could they have a fundraising event at a non-Jew's home or non-Jewish restaurant or something like that? So there are a lot of variables in that tshuva, but in the process of discussing those two questions, Rav Moshe makes the point that no question to have a dinner to thank a person, even in this case, he says, even a non-Jew, to thank a Kar Satov, to thank him, he says, it's Heter Gomer. There's no question that that would be permissible and appropriate. So you see two different reasons why it would be a good thing to show honor to givers. Number one is it'll inspire other people to give, or the donor himself to give again. Number two is it's a Kar Satov. It's the right thing to do to be able to say thank you. So either one of those motivations are correct. The last word on this I just want to conclude with is that one does have to be careful about an Isser in the Torah called Hanifa. And Hanifa is hard to translate literally, but one of the times that you're over Hanifa is if you praise someone, you give them an impression that something they did was Aser, is Mutter. That is a textbook example of Hanifa. It's a major stress. Thank God, not so much for shuls or not our shul, but for many, many yeshivas, etc., a major issue is when you have non-religious donors, and to what extent can you accept their money, and how do you honor them? What if by honoring them it looks like you're giving, you know, so to speak, a yishar koach to their intermarried spouse? You know, these are real issues that come up for most of us all the time. And there are ways to accept the money and ways in good conscience even to observe appreciation, but one has to be very, very careful. I've been in Q&As with Professor Schechter where he has been berserk upset at yeshivas that have honored intermarried people or other things because he thinks it's all the money in the world. You're basically selling your soul. So you have to be very careful. There are lines that have to be drawn, and obviously these things have to be kept in proper balance. But leave that aside, the principle of honoring the people who give is an old one and a virtuous one. Yashar koach to the gavoyim, and keep on giving. It's your best school for rebound in the financial crisis.